Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Welcome to the Property Exchange podcast. This time, the new reality for prime central London, the capital's elite neighbourhoods. The focus of this episode is prime central London, PCL. These are the capital's smartest areas, places like Belgravia, Chelsea, Notting Hill, Knightsbridge and Hampstead. The mood in these world-famous districts is downcast, as new research from Winkworth underlines. In parts of Knightsbridge and South Kensington, the values of some properties are as much as 30% below what the owners originally paid. This is thanks to higher taxes, changes to the non-dom rules and wider geopolitical uncertainty. But that's not the whole story, as the Winkworth report sets out. As we learn from the report, the market is adjusting to a new reality. Activity, and yes, there is activity, is being driven by need rather than opportunity. Buyers are around, but they will only move if the price is right, and that means price cuts in many situations. To find out more about what's actually happening and what could lie ahead, I'm joined by Dominic Agay, CEO of Winkworth, and by Charles Irwin from Winkworth, Notting Hill. Dominic and Charles, thanks for joining us. Now, first to you, Dom, and I'd like to drill down into this really rather good report on the mood in PCL. There's one key comment on the first quarter of this year, which said, where pricing was right, committed buyers acted. What exactly is that all about?
I think it means that there's no secrets in the market anymore. I think people are aware of, you know, the price reductions that have come through prime central London. And so, you know, where that is accepted, which is increasingly being accepted by sellers, that perhaps some of their properties aren't worth, or their properties aren't worth what they were 10 years ago, then, and you're seeing buyers then seeing value and buying them. So I think that's what it means. There's no point, you know, sort of pushing for optimistic views because ultimately that sort of optimism isn't quite there at the moment.
I'm going to quote again from the report from one of your PCL colleagues who said, the only way to get activity is through absolutely brutal pricing. Unless you have something particularly unique, it struggles without it. First, what is absolutely brutal pricing? What kind of price cut is that? And what constitutes a really unique property? Two questions, but first on the absolutely brutal pricing.
So I think absolutely brutal pricing is what I mentioned earlier, really, which is accepting that, unfortunately, these property prices are, in some cases, significantly down where they were 10 years ago. I think in each prime central London area is its own village and has its own dynamics. But in the worst cases, you're looking at sort of 30% below 10 years ago. So that is a big adjustment, and that is definitely brutal pricing. So, you know, the thing is that looking at it now, we're not in a position where that's going to improve immediately. So really it is time to perhaps realise that if you want to move on and take that price, and then there are buyers there for you.
Well, a lot of people will be listening to this and thinking, isn't there still demand for that once-in-a-lifetime property, that trophy house? Are they keeping their value?
Yeah, I think there's definitely, I mean, from what our report shows, is that the market that is most in demand is kind of the middle market. You know, the big impact on prime central London have been in the one-bed flats where, you know, the investors aren't there. The pied-à-terre perhaps isn't so necessary in the post-COVID work from home 1 or 2 days a week. You no longer need your base in London, perhaps. And your sort of international banker who may be here for 5 years isn't buying that flat for that period of time because stamp duty's gone up. So they've been deeply affected. affected, and at the higher end, you've seen some non-doms and taxation concerns feed into demand there. But the, you know, the 2-3 bedroom middle markets are, you know, there are people keen to get into those. I mean, it's a fantastic. They are fantastic places to live. And, you know, if you can get yourself a 2-bedroom flat in, you know, for Garden Square in Notting Hill or anywhere through Chelsea, you know, that is a great purchase now because there's real value and it's closing that gap to, you know, the prime fringe areas that, you know, many years ago it was, they were completely out of reach. Now they're sort of within reach and they're great lifestyle choices.
At what point do people sense this is bargain basement territory and come in and snap up that once in a lifetime stucco fronted townhouse in Belgravia?
Yeah, so exactly. I mean, I think it's pretty close. I think they are, you know, they are beautiful places to live. They have beautiful architecture. They're very centrally located. And, you know, they just got, there was a huge gulf that opened up with them and surrounding areas. And that was really driven by international investment and kind of the safety deposit box approach towards London property. So, you know, perhaps for the better now that, you know, it is driven, that is inverted. And now you're seeing more domestic buyers than you are seeing international buyers. So whereas it was perhaps 60-40, it's now inverted the other way. And those domestic buyers are, you know, filling these properties and bringing life into the high streets.
So I'm going back to the report, which talks about a structural retreat of international wealth following non-dom policy changes. Now, against that background, what would it take to reverse this trend in the shape of tax changes? Is the mansion tax even a factor? Is it the non-dom policy changes that are absolutely key to this massive trend change?
I think we often talk about it, a lot of it's language, and non-doms is clearly the biggest single thing that's been done that's affected people's belief that London's the place to base himself as an extremely wealthy person. Therefore, it's had a very negative impact on the higher end of prime central London, which were purchased and owned by many of these people. So that has had a huge impact. But there's also, you know, there is a language challenge for how the government communicate on taxation. And we saw lots of kite flying end of last year, which, you know, killed demand for central London because a lot of it centred around what taxation we brought in against the wealthy. And mansion tax was muted to something far more extreme than perhaps came in. I mean, clearly it is still a factor, but it was doomed, you know, there are big numbers being thrown around. And every time that happens, that dents the confidence of the international investor into the London market.
So all that kite flying destroyed that hub of wealth creation, which the capital should be.
Yeah, so I think what we need is, it's the other part of the question, so is we need a change in direction of language. You know, people need to look for the positives in London, and there are lots. You know, there's a lot of investment coming in, and particularly in the new economies of AI and digital. You know, London's becoming a global hub. As I say, it's got fantastic infrastructure, fantastically located geographically and time zone wise, and so there's an awful lot to it. But at the moment, the language is very much sort of down. We're downbeat on ourselves, and I think that has a big impact.
That's a very interesting thing. Close to the studio where we record this podcast, we see the big AI giants setting up their London bases. Yeah. Now, they're all going to be looking for homes. Do you think they're going to buy some of these underpriced flats, or do you think that's just going to drive up the rents for gorgeous apartments? Where do you think they will find homes, these people who are coming from San Francisco to build the UK operations of their businesses?
Yeah, I think they can see it change. I think Brexit for Prime Central London was damaging. You know, it was a big statement against international communities that I think they felt took, in many cases in Europe, took personally. And I think you'll see that change as we move to a more balanced position with our international trading partners and are open to investment. And then you're seeing the value in these areas and, you know, where London prices, central London prices have gone compared to other international cities. And, you know, I often have these conversations in people in the sort of, I say, the prime fringe, perhaps the zones too. And you're looking at, well, perhaps now, you know, they can see their house at 2 million going to 2.2, or maybe not going anywhere for the next 5 years. But if they could buy that place in Chelsea just over the road, then you know, maybe that would be 4 million. You know, I think there's a perception that at some point things will turn, but it needs different communications and different politics than there are at the moment, I think.
The report is talking about the shortage of gorgeous flats to rent. Now, I'm a tech bro with my gilet and everything else, and I'm looking for a very nice flat in London. Would I find the flat that I want to rent for 18 months, 2 years?
I think there's a fantastic amount of property, fantastically well done properties for the trendiest of us, as well as the more traditional. So I think the property stock's there, the type of property people want is there in spades. It's really the choice of basing themselves in London is the defining factor, really. And you are seeing that now. Say with your tech bros moving in, then you know they will be looking to rent or buy, and as they grow their success, I'm sure they'll be buying some of the finest houses.
So is that why the report says rents are softening, even though the demand for nice apartments is up?
Well, I think rents will suffer in a similar way to the top end of the sales market. So, you know, the people, there is rentals perhaps even more so because it's very much affordability driven. So you're looking at who are driving the top end rents, and you know, if they're not there, the non-doms and the high net worth individuals, then you know those prices aren't driven by them. And if it's a domestic market driving rents, then it is driven by wage inflation, and there's a lot of choice. So I think what you saw was that central London shot up in rental value, and you know, eventually it has to come back to affordability of those that are living and working in central London, because otherwise they can just move to zone two and still get to work. So it's not a needs-based marketplace in sales or rentals. So that's a reinvigoration of the, what should we call it, the non-dom high end, affects sales and rentals. And I think on the supply side, it's a feature of, you know, a lot of these will be things coming back to the market that perhaps didn't get the rents they wanted or are available again. So it's about sort of bouncing off an affordability ceiling, which has dampened rents, but activity is there. And I think you're still talking about, in the perspective of them being ahead of where they were before COVID.
So PCL, in a word, on life support, actually busier than we think, headed for better things, sum it up.
I think it's waiting for its moment. It's where it is. I think it's there've been a few stones thrown at it over the last few years, and when it's seemed like the sky's been clearing, and I think it is at the moment looking increasingly good value, and I think there is a positive London story, and so I feel it's waiting for that moment.
Now, on the other side of the table is Charles from Notting Hill, which is west from here, like about a few stops down the line, gorgeous area, but people aren't moving. You say in the report that the price per square foot has dropped to around 1,250, which is more like the price of surrounding areas like Chiswick. What's happening? This is Notting Hill, people, the place where everybody wants to live, or don't they?
So, I mean, I think I sound probably slightly overly negative in that one line. But when you look at the market, as you alluded to in your intro, you know, many properties have lost a quarter since the top of the market, which was 2015, 2016. And this has largely been brought about by stamp duty changes, as well as everything else coupled with that. But in Notting Hill, our purchasers generally have a home elsewhere, so they're paying 5% additional stamp duty. Many of them aren't based in the UK, so they're paying the extra 2% stamp duty for not living here full time. So that's 7% on top of the 12% at the higher end of stamp duty if you're buying a home. So in total, that's 17% stamp duty on the purchase of a home. So people will just say, well, you know, I'll rent, or I'll hold off on my purchase for now. So that invariably has brought prices down. coupled with the sort of wider global economic outlook, wars and Brexit as well hasn't been kind to us. Having said that, we are very lucky in Notting Hill that we have very much a village atmosphere and people like to live there. Great schools, access around the capital. So what I was alluding to in that comment was, you know, when we have a couple of houses on at the moment on the market in general where the price per square foot is less than £1,500. The prices in Chiswick and Fulham, prime Chiswick are sort of on a parity, but you're getting a lot more space.
You get more space, but it's not Notting Hill now,
correct,
is it?
Exactly. And that's what, you know, as Dominic alluded to, we need to be positive. We need to focus on the positives of the area. And when if you're buying into this market and you haven't, you know, you haven't sold or you're coming in with fresh eyes, now is the time to see exceptional value. And when, you know, you're looking, comparing about living in 2,500 square foot in Fulham versus 2,500 square foot in Notting Hill, I know where I'd rather be.
I'm just going to paint a picture very quickly of the road on which you have your office. Westbourne Grove, gorgeous boutiques, gorgeous outside cafes. It's a broad street where you can talk. The Portobello Road Market is close by. You can be in Holland Park with your walking your dog. So much on the doorstep. You said before we recorded this that the Americans are in town. Are they seeking to buy or seeking to rent?
So we've definitely seen an upturn in the amount of Americans who are purchasing. And these are a number of different types of purchasers. So it's sort of, let's say, bank of mum and dad, which is parents buying for their children who have settled in Notting Hill or in London and want to settle in Notting Hill. That's quite a large proportion. But the other aspect is parents of Americans who have settled here and they are no plans on leaving anytime soon and they want to be close to their grandchildren. So we're buying a sort of 6-monthly pied-à-terre. They don't want to be on top of their children and grandchildren, but they want to be in Notting Hill and close by and close to all of the kind of, as we would call it, the Rodeo Drive of London, which is Westbourne Grove.
Is it the Rodeo Drive? Actually, it's a great deal nicer.
Probably, yeah.
Rodeo Drive is a little bit sleazy, where Westbourne Grove is almost got a wholesome quality. It's like kind of boho meets deluxe. Just very, very gorgeous. Now, can I ask if there are some homes that are almost immune to what happens in the wider economy, to wider prices, that are just one-of-a-kind properties that people will still pay top price for?
Absolutely. And those are the communal garden houses. They are above any price decreases. And the good news story is there have been a number of transactions in the last year, well over £30 million in our immediate area for people buying these once-in-a-lifetime communal garden houses.
Now, for people who don't know the communal gardens of your area, that would be, Dominic, Ladbroke Grove?
Ladbroke Gardens, isn't it?
Ladbroke Gardens. What other ones?
Elgin Crescent, Lansdowne, Clarendon, Stanley, all of those. I mean, we're very lucky in Notting Hill to have one of the, you know, the highest proportion, I think, of garden squares in London.
And a communal garden, if Dominic, you could just explain to people what that is.
So it's a large green space with sort of beautiful houses surrounding it where everyone can, you know, kids can play and firework displays can be hosted. And it basically buys you a garden that, a size of a garden that's, you couldn't get anywhere else in London. You know, they're huge and that makes for a magical childhood if you're a kid growing up in one of those houses.
So you come out of the back of your house into a communal garden. Who does the upkeep?
I would say Charles probably knows more than I do. I've actually sadly never lived around one.
But so the garden committees are once you buy onto these squares and you're, let's say you buy a house on Elgin Crescent, the way it works is your garden, which is, let's say, 25 feet, at the end of the garden is a gate that leads out into this wonderful communal garden. Once you buy onto this, you buy into the committee of these. There is a committee that runs these, and everybody who buys onto these gardens loves being involved. They have summer parties, they stage performances. As Dominic says, there are fireworks displays in November. It becomes a part of sort of your life in Notting Hill, and you make friends through it. And, you know, they're very well run. Ladbroke Square has tennis courts. You become part of a community that you may not get elsewhere, and that's part of their value.
So priceless. Now, Notting Hill is a place where the rich and famous like to rent because essentially it's easy to be a celeb there because everybody is cool about celebrity and they won't point you in the street. Could you just tell us briefly what's the demand like for rentals this spring?
There's obviously quite a lot of changes coming down the track regarding rentals with the Renters Reform Act. Now, one thing just to get across is a common misconception that it applies to all properties. It doesn't. If your property is more value is more than £1,921 per week, the Renters Reform Act does not apply to this. So more than £100,000 a year. So most houses in Notting Hill would rent for £2,500 per week plus. So you do not fall into the Renters Reform Act, which is a relief for many people renting, both renting and landlords as well. So that is a bonus for people who are looking to rent out houses. Our main sort of profile of tenant we get, you know, we get a lot of film studios who are renting for their stars, for the production company. They come in for 6 to 12 months, and people again are attracted by the village atmosphere.
Because people don't point, because celebs to a penny in Notting Hill. Now, we've ended on an upbeat note and I'd like to keep that vibe going. There are so many great things about London, fabulous parks, architecture, culture. I could go on. And instead, I'm going to ask you to list, each of you, three things that you think really make living in London worthwhile. First to you, Dominic.
Yes, I mean, I suppose those are the cliches, but they're true, aren't they? I mean, overall, I think the thing that makes it worthwhile is the work-life balance. I mean, that's people sort of talk about, you know, moving to the country for that. But in London, you have everything you want and you can get to your workplace within 20 minutes. So being able to do that and then pop out to restaurants or parks afterwards is ultimately what appeals so much to me about it. Beyond that, I think it's got something for every era, and at the moment I'm in a young kids era, so if you'd asked me that a few years ago, it probably would have been restaurants and bars, and now it's perhaps soft play centres and play dates. So I think it is a wonderful place to bring up little kids, actually. I mean, there is so much for them to do, and so many different clubs and soft plays and trampoline places and events that or wetland centres and barns to take them to. So it was actually, I think ironically, you know, I'm not sort of out of the country, but if you're in the country, you know, you are a bit more isolated with things to do with these sort of a 3-year-old. So that's another fantastic thing. And you know, then you have to fall into the fact that London is made up of a whole load of villages, really, and perhaps it's London more than anywhere else. But every area, it's such a vast place that every area is really a village, and you get your own butcher there, probably.
Fabulous. Over to you, Charles.
I think for me, first would be the transport system. I grew up in Dublin, which is a notoriously terrible transport system. In London, I can get around very easily at all times of the day, which opens up the capital to you and opens up theatres, restaurants, which again, you know, that's my second reason. The culinary aspect of London is fantastic at the moment. And Notting Hill in particular is having a sort of moment with restaurants and pubs, and it's a definitely culinary location. The river, I think, is never to be underestimated. I live very close to the river, and being able to run, walk, you know, pop into the pubs along there is just a fantastic thing to do on a Sunday.
Tired of London, tired of life. Dominic and Charles, thanks very much for joining us for this episode of The Property Exchange. Thanks for your insights, but that's it from us.
This has been the Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox and the editor was Marion Hardman.